Dudley, the LS Gamekeeper Tractor Giveaway. It's happening. August 31st is the deadline. Somebody's going to win this thing.
And they're going to get a nice unit.
I wish we could figure out a way to not give it away because no, I have enjoyed using it so much.
Yeah, it's got a belly mower. It's got a bucket on the front. It's got a bucket on the back.
Yep, and there's a tiller attachment that goes with it. So it's a very handy tractor around the camp house. So go to mossyoakgamekeeper.com/giveaway and you can sign up. Seriously, August 31st, somebody's going
to
win it.
I can't wait to tell all my buddies about it. Hopefully I can use it again if one of my friends wins it.
Hi, I'm Jeff Foxworthy and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
All right, everybody. Oh, Lord, here's that Mexican music, Toxie. I was telling you, for some reason, we are like New Mexico.
I don't know what that is.
I think it's because our guest today was talking about he was actually doing a bunch of gamekeeping work and was constructing a sombrero.
He did say that.
That's exactly what he said. 5 minutes ago, I heard it come out of his mouth.
Yeah, you did. That
maybe we'll have to get him to explain later in the broadcast sombrero is.
We're going to have fun today. I can just feel it. And let me just go ahead and tell everybody, Lanny's not sitting here, but when he walks up, whoever's looking out that window, wave him on in so he doesn't just walk off.
Yeah,
so,
take a call or something.
Yeah, so
he's going to be in a great mood after having a flat tire, no telling where he's been.
There is no telling. But Dudley, good to see you. Glad to see you.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and then Toxie down at the end of the table, you look like you've been on a tractor, and I know you're going back on a tractor.
No, unfortunately, I'm done. But I started early for the last couple of days.
Well, it looks like we're going to get some
rain
tonight.
Bobby.
Yeah, I know.
Don't talk about it.
I know. Okay, we'll move.
I've been watering my yard a lot and all my plants.
Like South Sumter County got like 6 inches today already down there. It's crazy.
Well, look, it went from nothing for 6 weeks to six
inches. We don't need 6 inches.
Yeah, you know. No, that's pretty crazy. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest because I can see him over there. He's jumping around. He wants to talk. But we have got the one and only Gerald Swindle.
Hey, welcome to the Gamekeepers, right?
Yeah, we blew the horns for you, Gerald. I mean, that's a big deal.
I mean, y'all brought in the big guns, too. Y'all brought Toxie in. Somebody must have told y'all I was going to say a cuss word or something. Y'all brought the boss in.
I'm the hired farm labor. That's what I am. I'm not the top gun.
Look, we get a big kick out of some of the things that you do, and obviously we all love to fish, but we get a big kick out of what we see you doing around the hunting camps and carrying on and stuff, and we've been wanting to have you on for a long time. But before that, let me just say, how proud are we watching you on these fishing tournaments, wearing the Mossy Oak patterns and out there winning friends, winning tournaments and influencing people? Yeah, you've got it going on.
Man, it's easy to promote a brand when it's your lifestyle. You know, that's what I tell people. I say, when you're sponsored by the right people, I was going to wear it anyway, you know, and when you're out there doing it in your own element and you can back the people that you grew up, like that was all I ever did was hunting and fish. So like, it's kind of second nature to me, but it's been fun. I have enjoyed, really enjoyed my relationship with Mossy Oak and seeing things and kind of understanding more about game and land prep and learning. You know, early on when I was filming in TV, I met Cuz and sit down and talk, and I realized I was kind of getting to that different stage of my life where I still like killing. Now, don't get me wrong. I will turn violent non-Christian in one day and kill stuff. But like most of the time, I'm trying to get to that next step in life where it's about the preparation and the lifestyle, the family style of coming back to the farm. So it's kind of been a cool blend now that I'm with Mossy Oak that I'm in that part of my life where I can come down and talk to you guys about the seed and plant and then go back and watch it. And it's kind of cool to me. It's me not being that when I'm not fishing, hunting is my getaway. That's where I go to get my sanity back. And my wife and I, we just enjoy it. We do redneck stuff. People ask us all the time about it on social. I'm like, we just do redneck stuff. I don't have nobody make my social or do nothing. We just pretty much show what we do.
That's what people want, you being you. But it's funny how we've had several close friends in fishing and of notoriety like you, and they are just exactly the same. Maybe there's different styles with you from South Carolina or Michigan, but the same thing. They would rather work on their place than they would hunt or even fish. And, you know, Hank's that way.
Absolutely. I think that's the key.
Kevin's same way. That's all he wants to talk about, you know.
That's what he always talks to me about, planting and hunting, and he loves it. But I like to give him a hard time because I'm like, bro, I just don't see many pictures of you on that tractor. And he's like, oh, I was on that tractor. And I'm like, but we like it. We like it. Like, I think when people always ask me about professional fishermen, they'll say, what separates or what's the common denominator when you get to the top 10 or 15 guys in the world? I said, if you sit all down at the table and talk to us, you're going to find out that every one of them are avid bow hunters, not just hunters, bow hunters. They want the hardest route they can take, and they strive and they live for the failure. That's what drives them. I was like, you just, you know, from Jason Christie, you look at him, you look at Van Dam, you just go down the list. Drew Benton's, all these guys hunt, man, and they're good at it.
Well, I'll tell you what else in common from listening to y'all too is the attention to detail. It's just kind of, it's not something y'all, I just talked to the group. It's not something y'all have had to make yourself do. It's just the way your DNA is already. And so it's like listening to you or Kevin or Hank, it's like you enjoy the fact that you tended to all the little details of have your place like you want to, you know, where a lot of people just want to blow through and do it and, you know, just kind of get on down the road and sit there and hunt and whatever. I mean, y'all are meticulous about every little detail. And that's, I mean, you know more about fishing, you know, you'll forget more than I'll ever know, but you don't get to where y'all have gotten without attention to detail, what you're doing.
And the sweat equity of doing the things like when no one's looking. That's what I tell people, like, really makes a great fisherman is he's doing the work when nobody's looking.
Right.
When there's no cameras, nobody's writing a story about him. He's in his shop prepping for the next day. It's the same with hunting. A guy that works on his farm by himself and really don't depend on a lot of people, he would rather fight it by himself and then enjoy it when it's done. He's paying attention to pick it up, like the stupid things, picking up the rocks that might break the seed drill. The guy that's cutting a new lane here, studying the wind, that guy is doing everything when no one's looking. And I think that's, to me, that's the cool part about land management. It's like, it's just me. You got to open, it's just like the good Lord just give you a plain easel to start painting
that's
on.
Exactly.
You're like, okay, I'm going to turn this track of land into a green field here. That whole master planning of that is fun. And when it all comes together, whether I'm sitting in a stand or it's my wife or a sponsor or somebody and they kill the deer, the satisfaction is still there that I created that spot, I made it happen. And you pay attention, like you said, detail, detail, detail.
Yeah, that's the attitude to have. And so do you have a farm over there somewhere around where you live that you're managing?
Yeah, my wife and I own 360 acres right out. We're about 15 minutes from Smith Lake on the Jasper side by Duncan Bridge, but we lease another 800 that joins my 360.
Wow.
And I own another 130 acres about 15 miles down the road. And then we own 304 acres in Weakley County, Tennessee. But my farm hand that I hired, a young kid, his uncle owns 2,500 that joins my 1,200. So got a pretty good block that we manage. And it's funny, we're talking about details, because I hired this young man a couple of months ago, and he's 30 years old, but he can run any piece of equipment. Like, Toxie, if you ever need a dozer runner, this kid can run the tracks off one. Like, he is the best I've seen on anything.
Wow.
But getting him to slow down and those tiny details, when me and him are working together, he says, you're killing me. You're killing me. And I tell him, I said, hey, son, if we're going to get up at daylight, we're going to do it right. We're not going to half drag it around here. We're going to go get the drag. Now he's like, when he's with me, he goes, you're just going to slow down when it counts and do it right, ain't you? I'm like, my daddy beat that in me. I mean, I don't know how I wanted to say that when we was talking about details. I want to say my daddy had the knack about beating the details in you. I don't know how he done it. He could cure anything. You had the flu, he could beat it out of you. if you wasn't paying attention, he could beat it. If you had attention deficit disorder, he could beat it back in you. You'll learn. So my daddy was that farm guy that paid attention to every detail. And his motto was, if we're going to do it, We're going to do it the best we can do it with what we got. And it's funny now to be, I'm only 52 and I'm working a kid that's 30 and he's a really good hand. And that's hard to find. I mean, I've went through some guys that want to work and they can't work. This kid can do a lot, but when it comes time, he wants to get in a hurry. When I come up here, there's dents all in my big butterfly, bat wing, bush hog, and my skid steers all tore it in the back. And I looked at him. I said, did you wreck them all at one time? I mean, did you just hit everything?
Yep.
He says, well, I was in a hurry.
No.
I says, because you ain't paying for it. When you pay for it, you'll slow down and look behind you when you're backing up.
Right. That's the one lesson I would tell. The good ones always take their time and – or conscious of, and yep. You know, a guy like Greg, you know, he's been doing it forever.
Yeah,
he can get a lot done in a hurry, but they still, especially in farming, they take their time because not only will you tear stuff up, you probably won't do the best job with whatever you are you're doing.
I see a lot of that with folks ordering trees. It seems like when you know folks get interested in doing it, they want to just plant their whole place in trees.
Right.
And usually they call back and said, I had about 20 or 30% survival. I hurried it, didn't protect this, that.
Right.
Then they start coming up with like a five-year plan and just doing a few trees a year.
Yep.
And that seems to relate a lot to management in itself. As you know, you take the time to do it right and come up with a long-term game plan.
Yep.
Like, paying attention to like the details and trying to work with my young boy working with me. It's a simple stuff like if you're spraying. So we went in, we did our first round of bush hog, and we're going to come back in and burn everything down and spray it. And I'm watching him, and he's skipping gaps. And he would get to the end of a field, he'd like one more pass, and he'd be out, and he'd want to go get more water and start on another side. I said, no, we don't do that. I said, overlap. I would rather you overlap than skip a gap. And I said, I know nobody in the world is going to see that but me and you, but it bothers me that we did 6 acres and we left out a 4-foot strip down the middle. I'm like, I said, you got, so you watch him do that stuff. And it's just because whether it's a age group or just wanting to do it quicker. And I'm guilty. Like I can work pretty fast, but most time when you get in a super big hurry, you tear up more than you fix.
Yep.
And just, you watch guys fill up feeders. My pet peeve is send somebody filling up feeders. And I say, hey, that feeder's going to hold 600 pounds. And he said, well, I didn't have a 400 and I left. We'll go back down there and put 200 more in it. I mean, I'm that OCD. Go back and fill it up. You know, don't quit. Because see, I tell him, I said, what you did, you got 3/4 of the way of getting a really good job done and you quit. I said, you don't know when you're going to be back. So that extra 200 pounds may be the week that you got caught up somewhere else, that feeder still be running. So I watch all them little details. When we ride around now, he knows, have batteries. Because you never know what camera you're going to go by, it might be dead. You never know what feeder you're going to go by, it might be dead. So, like, I think it's an age thing. Like, I watch what you guys do in Gamekeepers and how y'all, it's weird because I think it's a maturity level because it's patience. You plant trees because you're patient. You don't plant an oak tree and expect to get acres on it next year. You're looking 20 years down the road. And I don't know sometimes that a 20 or 21-year-old or 25-year-old kid sees it that way. He wants to plant it this week and hunt off of it next week. So I think with Gamekeepers, it's really like watching what you guys do. It's taught me to be more patient working the land because the land don't work overnight. You don't change it overnight. You put effort into it. You mold it, but you might have to – it might be 10 years before you get the reward on it.
Yeah. Yeah, you get the instant satisfaction of doing something, but you kind of get that long term of watching it develop and mature, and I think that is highly rewarding.
No question, no question about that. Skipping details is I've made more mistakes, you know, and still do sometimes. Then it's not as much getting in a hurry as just too many things pulling on you.
Yeah,
to finish, you know. Like yes. You should.
I'm sure that happens to you a lot. You got a lot pulling on you. And so.
Well, the main thing is, you know, what is most important, like everything in life, you have priorities. So be sure what is most important to you, what you think is to your place, you be sure you finish that to the nines and then work your way down. You know, so if you leave something off, it is the least of the importance.
Yeah. So, Gerald, look, we got some questions to ask you, but one of the things I want to kind of start with is when you're looking at your property, what are some of the things you have enjoyed doing on your property that you think makes a big difference so that somebody that's listening, including us, can take and apply that to their own place?
I would say without a shadow of a doubt, And my this little 360-acre farm is a prime example. When my wife and I bought it, it only had one driveway into the old farmhouse that was built in the 50s. So, yeah, we remodeled it, and it looks a lot nicer, and that's satisfactory. But what it didn't have was any roads, no infrastructure, no way to get around. If you could do one, if I could tell somebody, if you want to do one thing to your piece of property to add value to it and enjoyment, put quality roads in. Put quality roads in. If you think it needs to be 6 foot wide, it needs to be 12 foot wide. Mm-hmm. Widen it up where you can drive around and bring your wife or your children or a guest and be able to look at the property and enjoy it. You don't want to just have 400 acres and say, well, that's it down there in the woods. It's pretty steep. We can't get to it. But I promise you, it's pretty.
Right.
I think to me, just building the roads where I can ease around and see it and then come in on it. And some evenings, it's as simple as my wife and I just want to get on a golf cart and might want to get a cold pop and just ride down the road without beating yourself to death. So it took me a while to realize quality roads makes a quality experience. Then you can build good green fields. But like so many people just have the roughest road going into their place. And I'm like, you can't get good equipment in, but nobody wants to spend the time and the effort. So to me, the biggest satisfaction I had after done it was putting in quality roads.
I think a big timber company would agree with you on that. I think a realtor would agree with you on that.
No question.
Not only does it make it more accessible to be able to goof around and get your equipment in there, I would say that it probably improves the value of.
Oh no, no question about that. I think it helps the. In some cases, I think turkey first on a lot of things. I think it helps your place for turkeys a ton. To have big, wide, open right-of-ways going through it as opposed to, you know, a few little woods roads.
I know I'm jumping in here, but access is everything. Yeah. I know what y'all are talking about just by hearing you talk.
That's right.
Toxie may agree with this. I made a comment to this young kid working for me. We're working on another piece of property over here, and I said, let me tell you something. I said, anytime you want to buy a piece of property and try to sell it, I said, the number one thing I've learned if you're going to flip property is put in a good road. I said, because if a man can drive out here in his Suburban with his wife, and drive down there and look at it and drive out and not beat that truck blue, I said, you're probably going to sell it. But if he has to pull up at the gate and say, honey, there it is, I said, you got to remember the wife's 50% of the decision on this. And I 50. Said, build roads if you're going to show it. Yeah. Or maybe 80%. Yeah. But you want them to be able to ride through the property and at least see it. And that's like so many times you pull up a piece of property for sale. And if you don't walk it, you have no idea. Which
no doubt
if you're trying to get a steal on it. But if you're trying to flip it, having quality roads where they can ride around it, even as a realtor, to show it, it's key.
I tell you, we spend a lot of time looking at maps around here. And to your point, Gerald, you never know a place till you get your feet on the ground, you know, and actually get through it and walk it from stem to stern. You never know. You can look at a map all you want to and topo lines and this here, there, and there. But till you get on there and get access to it and get around it, it's
So I say first, my priority's been when people, you know, buy a rough piece of land, what do I do? What's most important? How do I – you know, and everybody, what everybody's going to enjoy it for is probably a little different. But for me, number one is the roads.
Oh, yeah.
Now, maybe you don't have to go all the way to your dream road system on day one, but the roads and the access come first. My second thing is actually, believe it or not, a fish pond. And my reason for saying that is you don't have to have a really big place. I mean, if you have, you know, when you don't have a really big place, you can have deer hunting, you can have turkeys, you can have whatever, probably, depending on where it's sitting ducks. But you have a hard time sharing that with a lot of people. And so, I mean, you just can't. There's not
That's
enough,
right.
you know.
A,
so what
resource.
I, my first thing is if you can have a good, for one, you can, if you have a good fish pond, today's biologist can help you. You can guarantee the success. I mean, you go by their formula and it's guaranteed. Mm.
Right.
And you can let kids and friends, you know, in fact, you need them to fish it to keep the, you know, so to me, that's the first thing. My third thing is like some kind of place, and Bobby has something like that now, it's really cool, is some place that the family can go spend a night, you know, on it. If, you know, obviously if you live there, that's different, but yeah.
Bobby has never spent the night on this place. No, I rag him about this all the time.
So those are the three things to me before I even got involved. The rest of it will come easy as far as crafting all the stuff for hunting and habitat, but roads, a pond, and a place to stay, you know, that will give you more family enjoyment right there than anything.
No doubt about
it. And just a place to go get away from it all. And
I would agree with Toxie 100% on a place to stay. And I'd go as far to say it doesn't even have to be fancy.
No.
You first get a piece of land. Dude, if you just want to convert a storage shed into a little two-bed, like a little – two-bed cabin.
That's right.
It's still a fun night out. You can put a camper. You can pour gravel and put a camper there, but what it also does, it lets you spend more time there so you can get more done instead of having to drive back and forth to work. It does, but you know,
there's something.
That's just some simple place.
There's something kind of spiritual about staying or spending a night or whatever on your place. Mm. You know, you're right, it could be, and it does not have to be anything fancy. There's something so cool about that. I mean, from the first day, I was still, you know, it was a while ago, but I still, you know, that first place was where you know, our main place in Alabama is down there now, and I still remember parking on the side of the road, walking out there and going out and grabbing a handful of dirt. I kept it for a while. I don't know where it happened to it, but
that's mine.
It just like, you know, just like in the movie.
Nobody ever talks about what Toxie's talking about, like the satisfaction of staying there. Everybody talks to me about hunting and or the actual catching the process of the fish or just killing of the deer. And I'm like, man if you just knew what the feeling was, if you just bought a 10-acre plot of land or a 1,000-acre plot of land. I remember the first time my wife and I walked across our property. We started this project, 16 years ago. We never shot a deer off of it for the first 12 years.
How about that?
We didn't have any deer. Like they just wasn't here.
And
we
did,
the first rows in with a chainsaw and a pole saw by myself.
Oof.
No tractor. So like this progress just kept going and going. And now we walked down through the other day holding hands and we kind of smiled. I said, you know, we did this.
That's so cool.
We built this with our own two hands. We also were able to earn a living doing something we love with my two hands and her helping me in the office. And I'm like, what a better feeling is to walk out across your piece of property. That's what, to me, hunting is never talked about. Like, nobody take that feeling. That's as good as walking up on a dead turkey or a dead deer.
It's better.
We did this. We made a difference.
Look, if I could give people one message from all that we do, what he just said, what we're talking about would be that, you know, you literally don't want to miss the forest for the trees.
That's right.
In life. Because one thing about life, once it's gone, you know, that was yesterday. You can't get it back. So don't waste your time caught up in the wrong thing. And if you have that, you know, what makes him appreciate it too so much, he carved it out from, you know, basically an acre on himself and together with his wife. So what a great experience. When it happens that way, you appreciate it more. But it doesn't matter whether you just already had a bunch of money and or inherited a big place. Don't ever lose that. What Daniel say?
Wonder.
That sense of wonderment.
That's
just
right,
like wonderment. We have as little kids.
WUND.
It makes life so worth the living.
And look, I'm going to tell you what, man. When you're out there getting, you know, the more you put in, the more you get out. And doing the work yourself and putting the time in is just so much more satisfying than, you know, just showing up hunting. It just is.
Yeah, somebody mentioned this earlier, and I got to thinking about it. Some of my best memories are like pole sawing branches with my buddy Jack you know, whatever. It's not as much like that hunt where we had those two gobblers come run, you know. Like,
no, it's all the work.
Some of those other memories are
come back to you, you know, because, you know, that's what it's
been. I just can't see you. But,
well, that's
doing all that, Dudley.
Does he know how to run a pole saw?
That's what you don't see. I tell people, I'm like, you know, they say, I want to get my kids to hunting and my wife, because they'll always ask me, how in the world did you get Lulu to start hunting? And I'm like, when we got married, she didn't hunt or fish. And the first time I took her hunting, I set her below a lock on, and I'm sky high, and I've got the pull-up rope tied to her finger, and she's covered up in a chair with some cane and a piece of blanket. And every time a deer would come, I'd pull up on that pull-up rope and let her know one was coming. She wasn't, she didn't even know if she was going to like it. And now this is a woman that's got her own golf cart, two different bows, guns, AR-15s, thermal imaging, and she hunts by herself, and she can kill them. But it was a process that we went through to get her there. So I tell you what sucked her into it was working. Like when she would come up here, we have two tractors. And I remember one night I went down to check on her. We made our big grain fields and been working them. It was first year we planted them, and she's running a rototiller, and I'm going down there to check on her. And it's after dark, and I'm walking up on the field, and she's got the lights on, and she don't realize she's singing that loud. She got her earbuds in, and she's singing some Kenny Chesney like you would. I mean, it's dark, and I get her in the house, like, you can't even see nothing but the whites around her eyes. She's so dusty, but it's like it lured her into what we were doing.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then it become like a piece of life. So now when our grandchildren is up here, she says, let's take the grandbaby. So I want to, when I see them go to the hunting list, they say, how do you get my wife or kids to hunt? Take them with you when you're doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let them doing the work. Because sometimes just riding a four-wheeler in the mud before daddy hunts is funner in the summer than to hunt to a small kid. But like, I'm like you guys, my best memories are my dad carrying me on his shoulders, like walking around working.
Yep.
And the woods, like, boy, pull that limb down, do this. And I'm like, I just think that bloodline, people forget it. They think it just, you just put the mossy oak on opening day of deer season, go get in the stand, and you're a hunter.
You're
a hunter year round.
Missing the
majority. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that, today's world, it's not just like being in a hunt club. Half the reason is just so you got a group of guys to go do the work together.
That's right.
And, you know,
yep.
Think about the memories you can make doing that instead of just showing up. So, I mean, hey, look, we're for everybody. If you're the one that's just show up, that's fine too. But just want to point out some things that might make life a little bit more worth living.
Yeah, look at the other side of it.
You know?
It does make it more enjoyable.
We know you're a deer hunter. Are you a turkey hunter as well, waterfowl hunter? What else you do?
Well, I'm be honest with you. Them ducks scare me because I can't separate them in there, and I'm always afraid I'm going to shoot the wrong one. I'll be done shot some bandit one-legged pheasant from Argentina that's going to get me in a federal prison. I'm like, I like to shoot. I don't know, but I'm scared of that duck hunting, them things. But now, turkey hunting, I enjoy going. My wife enjoys going. It's usually in the middle of our, like, when I kick off fishing. I'm an okay caller. I'm not really a good turkey caller, but I'm a turkey chaser, though. Now, I walk them all day. Her and I have been doing it more and more since the first year we had COVID. When COVID hit, it was the first time we've ever got a turkey hunt at the farm because it's first spring we've been off. But I do enjoy it. The boy that hunts with me, some up here, another fisherman, Jesse Wiggins, he's a real good turkey hunter. And he comes up here and hunts. But he says, quote unquote, that I have the smart. He said, you've got more turkeys than any place I've ever hunted, and they're absolutely the smartest. He said, they're the hardest to kill turkey I've ever hunted in my life.
They must
I don't know if it's because I got too many.
That sounded like an invitation.
Yeah. Well,
did it not?
Well, hey, it's a challenge. It ain't an invitation. I will challenge somebody because hey, I will let you know. I'll show you where he roosts. I will show you where he's going to be at noon and at four, and he won't gobble. Now, you can ambush him and kill him, but you won't call him. They will not gobble when they hit the ground.
Well, he just hadn't heard our yelping. Like,
he ain't waited long.
Bobby.
That's right.
Bobby.
Okay. Well, you know, there's only one person in this room I've that made with, Merlin recognize yeah, them
that's
as
true.
A,
oh, here
a
we
wild
go.
Turkey. So.
Yeah, Mr. Yelpbox over there.
Well,
I mean, I hit him with the TK and Mike, you know, the Kiki Flucker. The I hit him with everything. They don't gobble. Yeah.
I love that Kiki guy.
Once they come off the roost.
If you yelp at them the way you just talk all the time, you're probably yelping at them a little too much.
Hey, the boy I hunt with, Jesse, he don't call. Like, he's one of them guys that don't believe in calling much at all. You'll fall asleep.
He probably do.
He won't, like,
he'll probably have better luck, too.
He just says we got too many hens. He said, dude, I'm just telling you. He said, you got 30 or 40 hens we see every day on every different field. And he said you can't hardly compete. So, like,
that's right.
That would be a good education for me is like, how do you separate when you got all them hens? You know, it gets tough. Like, what do you do as a beginner turkey hunter? Like, how do you separate the gobbler and get him to move?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if anybody knew answer,
right?
we got some techniques.
Yeah. Well,
if you can grow that many turkeys on your place, you're obviously doing something right.
That's right.
You should
not
have
many
more
people
gobblers.
Can,
or
I've
something.
Got them.
May not have. You may have some bad neighbors.
Yeah.
But
that's what it sounds
like.
Well,
I kind of got that. Toxie summed it up. I found a four-wheeler trail in there this year. I think it was a golf cart. And I'm 99% sure these boys have been snaking in their turkey hunting because I'm not home that much and there's not a road in there. But what he don't realize is I have researched him, his children, his dogs. There's more cell. I got more stealth cameras. I hung two yesterday, 15 foot high. I towed his sticks in and was hanging cameras in trees. If he comes across there this year, he's done. He's done. But
it
I think that's
documented.
What's happening, Toxie. I think somebody shoots them the opening weekend. They're in there where they roost, and they shoot them up pretty good when I ain't here. And then when you come back, they just won't ever gobble.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a public broadcast. What's it called when you do the?
Public announcement.
Public announcement.
Yeah.
Public service.
It is a PSA. He don't realize.
It is a PSA by Gerald.
For you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yep, the best. The best.
Be warned.
Well, you know, I mean,
not like poachers.
No. Well, let's stop and think about this
a
second.
I frown upon the poaching.
The poaching is a problem, and somebody like Gerald, who's going to a public tournament that's announced, he's going to be there, he's going to be fishing. I mean, that's a problem for someone like it. How do you go about poacher-proofing your property, Gerald?
Caretaker.
I had to hire somebody. That's why I hired that kid this year. And I mean, you made the best point. Like, that's what my wife's always said. She said, all these people around here follow you on every social channel. They know exactly where you're at. So in turkey season, when I'm in Sam Rayburn in Texas, it's free run of the place, and they know it. I've almost called them twice when they didn't realize we were going to be home. So, like, I hired this kid, and half of his job is to make sure that doesn't happen again. And that's – it would be no different, you know, if Toxie was on social on every channel, like, all the time, and people could follow, like, knew exactly where he was at.
You ain't got to worry about that.
Yep. You know, right. Well, and it's good for him that he don't, because there's a redneck going when Toxie's in. He's in Illinois. We're hunting his place this weekend. And it's a really hard thing to combat. Well, because social shows your life.
Sure. That can be tough. But I promise you, Toxie's always here.
Yeah.
Or there.
Or there.
He's here or there. That's
He's
for
here
sure.
or there. That's for sure. Yeah, that's got to be tough, though. Well, it really does.
Well, so.
It is. I'm going to catch him. I'm going to catch him. I'm pretty
no
much undefeated.
You're going to catch him. I'm undefeated. There you go.
Gerald, I
caught the girl on the horse that looked like Janis Joplin. It just took one video. When you get trail cam pictures of a girl wearing tie-dyed pants riding a horse all over your property, I'm like, it looked like Janis Joplin just got out of bed and started riding across my property.
Wow.
So it takes. But what the negative about social and the positive is, as bad as it's on negative, it took one video that I made in Wallang. I knew exactly who it was.
Huh. Interesting.
So it can be beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure can. Wow. Well, I tell you that, you know, poachers are a big problem. We talk about it all the time here, and you wonder, you know, just what's going on at your place when you're not there. But, like, we've got Spartan cell cams, and it's pretty incredible what they can do and how what you can see. But, obviously, you can't see everything. And one of the topics we've always wanted to learn more about is what guys do to try to take care of their place or protect their place. And you're as high profile a person as we've ever had. And yes, when you're fishing these tournaments, everybody knows where you are for the most part.
Hey, the best way to catch an outlaw is to hire a wannabe outlaw. And I did. Yeah. I mean, I hired a kid who's like me. My wife tells me all the time, she said, you would rather hunt a poacher as a 200-inch deer. Do you realize that? I said, you're right.
It is kind of
and
fun.
And if he's out there, I will find him. And that's like, but that's what it takes when you work that hard. Like when you do all the planting and the fertilizing and the work,
then
you realize somebody's backdooring you and just running over you, it just pisses you off to the core. So I'm like, I'll throw away half a hunting season, but I will catch you. And when I do, I will prosecute. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to prosecute you. So my farmhand said, he said, when I catch this old boy down here, I'm going to say you got two options. I can beat you to death down here. Or you can go to jail. It's your choice. You take it. He said, either one of them is not going to be good. But, like, and I don't know how it is in Mississippi, but in the state of Alabama, a game warden won't write a trespassing ticket. See, we can't call the game warden for trespassing unless they have a rifle and they've actually killed something. But if he's just on your property, game warden won't write it. You have to call the sheriff's department. They'll do the arrest on him and issue the citation, and then you can prosecute him that way. But the Game and Fish told me, said, we can't get landowners to prosecute enough. We lose it. Like, we go do all the legwork. We write the citation, and then the landowner says, "Well, that's the neighbor's grandkids. I'm just going to let it go." He says, yeah. "So we losing our resources," which is kind of sad that in a way that the Game and Fish won't come do it. But I understand if they're not making any money, so you're having to bother the sheriff's department to come in.
Yeah, well, it's not that they're not making any money; they're just losing money.
Well, they're losing time because they're building cases, right, and then they can't get them through the court system.
Yeah,
so
every county is different.
Right,
yeah. Every state, every county is different.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, what he's saying in Alabama is exactly
and,
right.
In Mississippi, can that?
Yeah, you can sign an affidavit
in Mississippi because there's a game warden.
Yeah, or you can sign a personal affidavit yourself that says you saw them on your property, and then take it to the court system that way if the game wardens aren't there. So.
So, right. Let me ask this.
Yeah, that's the advantage, though, like what you guys are talking about with cell cameras. This has been the biggest breakthrough for poaching, mm-hmm, because once you have the evidence,
yep,
you know, it's hard to beat that. And with cell cameras now, even if they recognize the camera and try to take it down, it's usually too late.
That's right.
So the first thing the sheriff's office asks us, do you have a picture or a video? Because if you do, it's lights out. But if you just think you saw someone, it's a little tougher.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So along these same lines, just recently in the last week or two, there's been some a walleye tournament up north where there was some, I'm going to say, alleged cheating that was going on. Is that rampant in some of these smaller bass fishing tournaments that you, as you've kind of gone through the system?
By the way, that was not a bass fishing tournament.
It was walleye.
That's right.
But so some of these smaller tournaments, do you hear of that happening?
Yes, sir, I do. And unfortunately, this is not going to be a popular comment to a lot of people. I see it at the highest levels a lot. It just gets washed under the rug, or they won't pursue it down because of what it would reflect on a league or a different trail. But yes, there were some high school kids caught in Texas a few months ago in a Tuesday night wildcat tournament, and they were part of their high school fishing team and had been a really strong team and got caught getting them out of a basket on a Tuesday night tournament for $300. So, I think as long as you have people competing and egos involved, cheating is going to come to play at some level. It's no different than a guy who wants to say he shot a 170. If he has to shoot him out of the window, his ego is so big, he's going to try it. So, unfortunately, yeah, we do see it. Now, at the level they done it, of putting 8 pounds of weights in the fish, first off, they only needed 2 extra pounds to win, so I called that overkill. I'm like, you should have looked up there. But that was really weird how they went that far over. Most of our guys will just fudge the rules here and there, go through the gray area. And I just think it's money. I think when money gets involved in egos, people do things that they later in life are going to regret.
Sad.
That's a shame.
Yeah, sure. That really is. Really can you tell us a fun or funny or memorable story from one of your fishing or hunting exploits? So they tell me you're really great at telling these stories.
I most of my stories, when I go speak, people think it's going to be all this fame and fortune of fishing and traveling. And I said, it never looks on paper like you think it does. You see what the TV show looks like or the highlight reel looks like. But I said, you don't see the behind the scenes, like when no one's looking. Because I said, you can stand on stage and make it sound like it was the best day in the world. And really, it's just you've been double dipped and dog pooped and rolled down a dirt road all day. it's been a brutal day. I mean, I was fishing several years ago trying to make the Classic, and I was a lot younger then. And to make the Classic was worth about $25,000 to $30,000 in bonuses, which at that time in my career was a lot. You know, I was a house framer by trade. I made $10 an hour. Somebody says extra $30,000, dude, that's like a year's pay. I'm all in. And I was at the last tournament of the year, and I had to catch them pretty good. I was 25th in the points. I had to stay there. So day one, I go out, I come in, and I'm in 25th. I'm right where I needed to be, and I make the Classic. I got 2 more days. Well, I go out on day two, and I get to the ramp. And what had happened the night before is I went out to eat with a sponsor, and I'm not a big frou-frou. I'm a meat and taters kind of guy. I don't get all off. I don't run off. I stay in my lane. But that day I was hungry, so I dove in a bunch of this salad that looked like Biologic. I don't know what it was, but I shouldn't have ate it. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. So, I'm staying in a little hotel room called Pam's Last Resort at Hamilton Lake in Arkansas. And when I tell y'all it started thundering and lightning outside, I'm telling y'all, son, it was hitting. And I'm not talking about raining. I'm talking about my guts was tore up. There ain't a piece of toilet paper left in this resort. I'm in the Yellow Pages, and it's 3 a.m. in the morning. And that's the God's honest. I'm in the landscape, and I'd made it to the Ales. And I couldn't get off the commode. I'd never been so sick. And I finally got the courage to get in the boat. I had to stop off at a bank parking lot in a Regions Bank. And I know somewhere on security camera they think Bigfoot got in that flower bed, but I'm in a bind. So when I get to the ramp, I'm like, I got to do this. That's all I got. I get down there and Trip Welder says, hey, your partner today is going to be a lady named Mary, Miss Mary. And I'm like, oh, God, I got a lady. And I got the tummy bubbles. I got the chicken scoots. I'm in bad shape. I'm in bad shape. And I blasted off, and I'm running up the lake. And every wave I hit, I'm thinking, I'm going to black out. I'm done. I can't hold it in. And I can remember that morning, it was so quiet, guys. Literally, you could have heard a rat walking in high-top shoes in the grass. It was that quiet. You could hear me breathing. And the fish are schooling out there, and this lady's sitting right behind me. She's got her camera. She's squatted down there. She's watching every move I'm making. The fish come up blowing up, and I grabbed that topwater bait, and I threw it as hard as I could. And when I hold that rod, when you get right here and I let go, I kind of relaxed. You know what I'm talking about? I just kind of relaxed for a second, after the shot. Well, it sounded like two chickens up on the top of a barn, and they was just hitting every wall. Oh, Lord. And she's right there in the floor, and I'm like, I don't know how to tell this lady, but I have pooped all over myself. And I turned around, and I was like, Mary, I said, honey, I don't know how to tell you this, but I said,
I pooed myself. And she said, you did what? I said, I pooed myself. I said, don't act like you didn't hear it. I said, it's rough. She said, are you sure? I said, ma'am, I'm sure. Okay, I promise you what's happened here. I'm out there. But I don't know if y'all have ever been to Hamilton Lake in Arkansas. There ain't nowhere there that ain't $1 million mansion. So I find one loblolly pine and a rose bush that I got to get out on the bank, try to clean all this up, get back in that boat, try to get back out there and catch 10 pounds. And I did. I managed to catch 10 pounds, and I managed to make the classic. But I can remember weighing in that day in a rain suit with no drawers on. It was about 90 degrees. And on stage, they're thinking, boy, you've made your seventh classic. How good does this feel? But I'm just smiling like, man, it's just awesome. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, I'm going, I ain't got no drawers on. I done pooped myself today in the boat. So people always ask, like, is it always glitz and glamour? No. No. There's things that you'll never see. But those days happen, and my wife just laughs at me. She said the first 7 years we was married, she said, I thought you just wore one sock. I had no idea. She said, I just thought it was a trend. I'm like, No, I left with two on, honey. But yeah, if you never come down a loblolly pie.
That reminds me of what we always said about turkey hunting. If you're on the hunting club, we're all in a hunting club, turkey hunting together, and you walking down the road and you look down and you see just one cotton glove laying on the ground, don't touch it.
Don't pick it up.
That
guy did not lose that buff.
Yeah. Hey, that t-shirt pocket wasn't torn off for an accident.
That's right.
And if you get to walking and you see a sock and you see a sleeve and then a front pocket of a t-shirt, either his wife can't cook or he's been to Waffle House. So he's in a bind.
Oh, man.
Good story.
Just saying. I mean.
Is what it is.
That's my life.
You know what? I asked.
Other than that, it's usually real serious stuff or real bad stuff happens to me and my wife. It's nothing ever just right down the middle. It's either something crazy or something really goofy.
Well, look here. Well, tell us this. So it's well publicized, your fishing skills. You've qualified for the Bass Angler, the Classic, a number of times. You've been Angler of the Year a number of times. You're just a very celebrated angler. But how did you get interested in deer hunting? And can you tell us the story of your first buck?
Oh, absolutely. My dad hunted and fished. My dad actually was a trap for the state of Mississippi. I was actually, first seven and a half years of my life, we lived down on the reservoir at Jackson, Mississippi. My daddy trapped for the game and fish. And he hunted in a dog hunting club, which that's what people done back in, is run dogs.
That's right.
So I kind of been around it, that hunting, fishing, and whole deal. And then once we moved to Alabama, we lost pretty much everything we had in a recession. And then next thing you know, we just didn't hardly have a boat or nothing. And my dad just give up hunting because he sold all of his guns to try to raise the three kids. And that, so it was like, once I got out of high school, I kind of started picking up bow hunting a little bit. But my dad wasn't a bow hunter. He was a gun hunter. And it was so new to me. God, the first 3 or 4 years I hunted with a boy that his dad hunted, we knew just enough to be deadly, like deadly dangerous to each other. We shot over and under, like didn't have a range finder. I didn't have binoculars. I didn't have nothing. And I can remember like how hard I worked at that, trying to learn it, to the first time when I actually killed a pretty decent 8-point with a bow. That rush that day, I knew like it's done. I knew the day that I let that arrow go and that deer fell, I'm like, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. I don't necessarily have to have a camera with me. I don't have to have nobody with me. This was the ultimate joy. And I always tell my wife that story about when that arrow leaves just right and you hear that deer fall, like there's something about it. And the first buck she ever killed with a bow scored 154 in Illinois. She was by herself.
Come on.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. Trust me, she done killed old Hog Nasty. She kept telling me, she said, he's got kickers all off his twos. And I'm like, I ain't got no picture, no deer with no kickers off his twos. Oh, he had them. They was everywhere. But, like, when I got to her, she still couldn't hardly walk. She was shaking and trembling. She couldn't get down the ladder. She just tore up. She said, I know why you never can stop this now. Like, bow adrenaline. And she's rifle hunting, but there's nothing like bow hunting. There's nothing like watching that arrow leave that bow and knowing it's a good shot. I just, like, the first time I ever did it, I'm like, this is it. Probably 21 when I killed, 21 or 22, and I actually killed a buck, a decent buck with a bow.
Yeah.
I'd had some encounters, but a lot of misses. Of course, you know, a guy didn't even have a rangefinder. I had one tree stand and some nails and pegs I'd put in a tree. I mean, no safety belt. I didn't have a clue. I mean, I really didn't have a clue. I would climb limbs.
I mean, I think how dumb I was. I never even had a safety belt till after I got married. Once I got married, I was like, man, I can't do that anymore. I got to be responsible. So, like, that first 5 or 6 years was just trial or error. And so when her and I hunt together now, she'll say, how do you know not to do that? I said, well, you got a little while, because I could tell you about 15 deer that I missed doing that same thing. So maybe trial and error is the best way to learn.
Yeah, I think it does make a – it burns it into your mind.
Well,
that's
speaking
for sure.
Of that, I always, people ask me, how'd you learn that? How'd you learn this? How'd you learn that? I said, let me just tell you something. If you walk up there and put your hand on a red hot stove enough times, you'll finally stop, you know?
And yeah, bow hunting, you really do have to learn from your mistakes.
Yes.
Like when to draw back, all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Hmm.
That's exactly why Leanne hunts by herself. She hunted with me for a while, and I finally told her, I said, baby, I need you to sit by yourself. And she said, but I don't think I'm ready. I said, you're never going to think you're ready.
Right.
But I said, I need you to screw up a bunch, and you'll learn it a lot quicker. And, dude, the first day, she got skinned up bad by a deer she wanted to kill so bad, and he caught her drawing. So then she went through this whole thing, like, when he's looking and I'm drawing, and you have to explain to her, once you commit to drawing, draw. So then I try to explain to her, when you start drawing, if he turns and looks, you got about 2 seconds to anchor in. She's like, how do you know this? Well, I'm like, Toxie, if you've done and screwed it up as much as I have, you'll know that once you can't let it back down. So, like, after she hunted for a year or two by herself, she's pretty savvy about when to draw, when not to draw, when to shoot. And then now working with her on long-distance shots when she's shooting, like, where the deer, I always tell her where the deer's head needs to be if she's going to shoot a long ways. But I would have never learned that had I not sat in a tree and failed so much. There's no way somebody could sit and told me that, and I'd have been too prideful or too stupid to listen. I had to screw it up myself to remember it.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'm looking around the table. Everybody's, I can tell everybody's really enjoying this.
Nodding.
So Gerald, what about, again, I want to go back and make sure our listeners learn something here. On your farm, when you're, are there things that you do that you think specifically make certain areas be a better bow hunting area? Or do you go in there and go, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z? Or is there something like that you do?
I kind of come in, and my original game plan when I started laying my place out was to plant 2 big food plots. Like, I thought, to house enough deer. I think when most people, they want to have a lot of deer, but they don't have enough food or bedding area or resources. So the first 2 fields I built, one was 7 acres and one was 6 acres. We had to cut the pines, dig them out. And then I started putting in smaller plots around it, but I keep a lot of bedding areas where timber's been thin, and I'll leave it rough. And then, owning a skid steer and a mulcher, I can cut lanes, but I try to keep as much thick stuff as I can around some of these smaller fields. And I use my big fields. I don't hardly ever let anybody bow hunt my 2 big fields. And I have never let anybody fire a rifle over a green field that wasn't a buck. There's never been a doe shot off one of my green fields, nor will there ever be. So we bow hunt, but like on my big fields, it's my sanctuary that I'll have 20 or 25 deer on an evening. I just don't let people bow hunt them to booger them up, because I figure if you keep that many deer in the center of your property and put your small fields around them where you can set up to bow hunt, I think bedding area is key, and you can never have enough food. When people think, when they say, oh, the instructions say put 25 pounds on this quarter of an acre. No, my instruction says put 125 pounds because I anticipate being some deer here. So, like, they will eat you out of house and home. It may look good in October, but where are you going to be at in January when all your food's gone? So, like, don't start with deer in October and lose them in January because you didn't prep enough. So, I think for me, bow hunting on my place is, of course, they legalized baiting in Alabama. Several years ago, my wife says, this is going to be like shooting fish in a barrel. I'm going to kill every buck on this property 1 year into it. She goes, all right, this sucks. I'd rather just go back on them off acre trees. I said, because they know you're there. But you could set up bait stations and hunt the perimeter of them. We don't hunt on top of them. Like, my closest bait shot, if I'm hunting around a feeder, would be 35 or 40 yards. You know, and I tell people, if you're going to bow hunt, you're sitting right on top of it, you can't move. There is zero room for error. And then if I have a good station, I'll put a stand up for all 4 wind directions. I'm that weird guy. Like, if I've got a deer that I know traditionally gets in this draw every December, I'll have 1 lock on in there that I feed all year that'll have 4 stands on every corner. So when he gets in there, I don't have to wait on the right wind to get in the right tree. If I can get a marginal wind, you can kill him. But bow hunters need more cover and more food. Yeah, people think you need to be able to see a long way bow hunting. That's overrated. Yeah, you really don't.
In four times the patience that you think.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's right. Because, I mean, how'd you get that, for lack of a better word, anal about all those details? You know who else is actually the most anal bow hunter I've ever known, and I know thousands? Mark Drew. Mm-hmm. And what is his track record like?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he is so over the top about every detail. I mean, he is likely hunting out of stands. He hung 6 months before he's even in there. And won't, I mean, yep. I can remember him waiting for 2 months for the conditions to be able to hunt a deer and stuff like that. So, you know, it's kind of like the red hot stove thing. If you've screwed it up enough times, you'll just learn you can't blow in there. And our deer, I don't know. I mean, we always talk about, you know, kind of our ego here is like, oh, you ought to try to hunt our deer. Well, they are. It's tough, just like you over there with you. Alabama's the same way. Well, after a while, you know, what's the old saying about insanity? You know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, after years insane. And years of yep. knowing they're there and never having a chance or a shot or something, you realize you've got to go to that level of detail. Because I firmly believe, it's not an exact number, but like every time a mature deer, especially, knows you've been in there, I'm going to say it cuts your chances of having a shot at him in half. Well, two or three times, and you're done. You know, that chance is like one out of nothing just about by then. Yeah. So it's just so, you know, and that is the one thing it is aggravating when you have other people that don't hunt that way.
And turkeys are similar, you know. They seem to be harder to hunt in the southeast, yeah. but
same.
They are.
They are, but at least they announce themselves.
Deer, we have such a long season, in all of these southeastern states, you know, you may be able to get away with hunting over a feeder or over a big field and shooting once, but our seasons are so long.
Right.
The pressure is just so important around.
Well, the great equalizer on deer has become the camera. So
yeah, that's
that has become the great equalizer where you
can be there and not be there.
The ultimate scouter. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
No, that's
tremendously
100%.
I was going to add something to what Toxie was saying right there. One of the mistakes that I see made when you ask me about bow hunting my place that I see people make is they'll set their property up or they'll set their lease up and they'll bait. They have permission. They can bait and they just do some random baiting. They just walk out and say, let's just throw a bunch of corn on the ground and put a camera up. I'm like, why? Because if you're not ready to kill him here, don't put nothing out. You know, I'm a firm believer that when I get ready to bait, I may study 2 or 3 hours and know the place very well, but still go down there and study 2 or 3 hours before I put corn out. And I kind of keep a chart of what my dominant winds are in the month of December when they're in the rut. So like I set up for that wind in December, I find the tree that I think's right, and then I'll feed in the direction I need that. And I think people overlook that. Even setting our fields up around here, we went in and we run a dozer. We set those fields up to hunt our dominant wind. It's not any good in October, but when the deer are really on their feet in December, the winds will be right for those fields. So if you can bait, don't just go throw it on the ground and say, hey, if we get a big one, we'll come in here and hunt. Well, where are you going to hunt? Have you picked a tree out? You got plenty of cover. You got a backdrop. You're going to be silhouetted. Which way is the wind? How are you going to get in here? So, like, I ask people that when you do it. I'm like, think all that through before you ever put the corn on the ground because you never know when he's going to show up and you're not ready.
Well, especially, like, you're looking at something now. You need to think about what it's going to look like in December or even January, you know, wherever that rut is. And boy, there's nothing like a good old eastern red cedar somewhere up, hugged up against a tree somewhere. But, you know, or even with a bushy looking pine or something, or triple budded trees, stuff like that. It's so hard to hide from these deer in the middle of the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think ahead. What's it going to look like then, you know?
Dudley, you had a question?
Yeah, we had a podcast last week about feeding with Dan Moultrie, and we were talking about tips and things. And I was watching your YouTube page, and you had a recent tip about increasing buck activity just based on your personal observation, and you did some rigging. Can you explain that?
Yes, sir. I like to set my sling feeders a little higher than most, because you'll hear a lot of guys, as the argument is, like, can you get a mature buck under a sling feeder? And I'm like, hey, there's two or three things you got to remember. If that deer has been raised on a sling feeder from a fawn, at 4 and 5 years old, he's going to be more apt to come under. Can I go on a just a random piece of property sometime and make a 5-year-old get under a sling feeder? It's really tough, but if you do it, you're going to do it at a higher level. So I put my legs on all my sling feeders are 10 foot tall, and I spread them out. It's a little bit more aggravating to feel because you had to get on top of a buggy. But in my experience and what we've killed off this property, we've killed all of our big deer off a sling feeder, and they're usually way up in the air. It keeps the deer from being able to spin the plate and eat it, you know, when it's lower.
Yes.
And then we use that same scenario, like when we feed, what we was talking about, that detail, we have strict instructions. When you feed at my farm, everybody's got a bottle of Happy Herd. And I keep that caramel apple Happy Herd. It's in everything we own. And I spray it on my boots every time I feed from September and May. Like whenever I go in, I want to smell that caramel apple. So I want that deer to think every time. And I'll put that Happy Herd, I'll actually spray it all down in the sling feeder on the walls and let that fragrance come out every time. So therefore, when I go in to hunt, well, naturally, I'm covered in Happy Herd. So I'm trying to become what the deer is wanting to eat, because I'm that weird guy that says no matter what you do, you're not going to fool a mature whitetail's nose. You just... there's no such way to make yourself disappear. You can get close and you can do a lot of details, but you can't overload his sense where he can't separate what you are. But if you smell like what he's been eating the first time you hunt him, I promise you, he's going to be a lot more relaxed. So like that higher you make the legs and get the feeder off the ground, it actually lets the corn sling out further and the big deer don't have to get right up under it. Those short feeders, you'll get that corn right up under him. They'll say, well, he may be way on the outside of the feeder. He's not going to come right up under it when that thing's right over his head. They won't do it here. I'm sure in other places they will. But in Alabama, a fawn comes out looking up. When they hit the ground, the fawn lands on his back, and he's looking up in the loblolly for somebody sitting there. They looking up. So you just can't hardly do it. You got to get higher. The higher the feeder. Now, I don't know if it's been any of y'all's experience, but it's been lights out for us.
Yeah. Well, that was neat watching you chop the legs and retrofit them, and you know, simple process that anybody can do.
We did that. We've had one feeder, and we shot 130-inch 8-point off of it 2 years ago, which is not a giant 8-point, but it's a legit 130.
Yeah.
But it was a 6-year-old. We sent him off to a 6-year-old deer. The same boy Jesse shot a deer up under last year. It was an 8-point with two kickers, and deer scored 141. Dude, that's a big 8 when you have a score to put them on the wall for Alabama.
Yeah. Come on now.
Everybody throws – you hear guys throw that number around. They're like, oh, I shot a 140. No, you didn't. Then you didn't catch an 8-pounder. You caught a 4-pounder. But, you know, I said, when you talk about it, when an 8-point gets to be 140, he's got 12 and 13-inch twos. He's got 25-inch beams. He's got good browse. So, like, every big deer – and nice. We've got another deer this year under that same feeder already that's about 23 inches wide with a big drop time.
Wow.
And Jesse just looks at me. He said, there ain't no way that one feeder, I said, dude, I'm telling you, it stays there year round. So I think that does help.
That's no doubt about that.
And then we set that time off, and you just, the consistency of the corn and the smell, they just get used to it. I don't think it alarms them like just going in. If you put a sling feeder up during season, you're done. That's like fishing with rotten line. If you go in there in December and say, I'm going to put a sling feeder up, you might as well not even go back the rest of the year.
Good point.
That's a great point.
Lanny, you got a question? An observation?
Can
you tell us where you've been the last while you were late?
The old gamekeeper is running into some binds every night. Toxie, by the way, your tractor tire's got a hole in it. But nonetheless, we worked on getting that fixed. I'm getting a bad growl over here.
Yeah, because it's like.
But we got it. We're rolling again.
Which tractor?
6115.
That's what I was scared.
Mm-hmm. But.
What'd you run over?
I didn't. I wasn't operating. I wasn't operating.
I know.
I just happened to have the air compressor. We're out there just awesome. We got
Gerald
a little bit
knows
rain on.
What the next big question is. That 6115 is a pretty good size tractor. Front tire or back tire? Oh, my goodness.
Yep. I just looked at him and he knew.
Wow. Yeah. I hope you have good insurance.
I think we do.
I remember having to buy one of those little tires for mine.
They got some slime you can borrow there.
Oh, my gosh.
I was not operating, if it makes sense.
We're going to be running a sale.
Gerald, have you got anything else to add?
I don't know. I'm sitting here thinking. I'm talking about all my crazy deer seekers to some of the best deer hunters in the world. So, like, feels kind of weird telling
them
that.
What about your Sendero you've been working on?
Sombrero.
Well,
we didn't explain the sombrero.
Let me tell you how this sombrero is coming.
this sombrero has come about. We leased 480 acres at Joyner's Mine, and we went over there, and it's just rough. It's this paper company land. They got two roads in, and you couldn't hardly get a dog down one of them. We had to build the roads in there, and we get all the way in there. Deep, I mean, man, it's rough. Like, a fox can't hardly get down it. So we cut, we skid steer, and we finally get in there, and Jesse's looking at me. He said, where are we going to hunt? I said, we about to create it, son. I said, we got on that hill, we got topo, we looked at everything. I said, I'm about to make us some trails right down there. And I went all the way down there on two or three and come back and had this long trail there. I said, what do you think about that? And he said, that's got to be the prettiest sombrero I've ever seen. And I looked at him, I said, sombrero or sendero? He said, yeah, that too. I said, okay, from now on, we're cutting sombreros. I said, it's been our running joke. Every time I run it, he said, you're going to build them sombreros? And to me, I think that's the best way to see deer and thickets is those long, to make them 20 foot wide.
I'm a big fan in our world of hunt the thick stuff. And that's, I know people that are very successful, and they're very, very conscious of, like, you know, the stuff the deer are used to, be sure where the wind's blowing from, be sure you can get to it without spooking stuff. But those little, you know, they're just not going to be out in the open. But where if they're in cover and they've just got a little short something to cross, they're comfortable with it so much more. So, yeah, the spindle effect.
Yeah, the spindle. Yeah.
Hub and spoke.
Been working on those all
week. We have a place called the Spindle Field.
Yes, you do.
One of our best places.
Toxie, what do y'all use when y'all cutting lanes like that from a hunter standpoint? Because I've tried about everything, and I'm enough that I've got a high flow skid steer, and I've got cutters, and I've got a mulcher. But I think the mulcher, my Takotsu mulching head is the, like, really works good on making those, but I kind of like know what y'all use.
I honestly, in most cases, we'll use a dozer. Now, it depends on what it looks like. If it's a bunch of switches, you don't want to be pushing a D5 through there. So, I mean, yeah, the cutter we've got, we just actually have a great sponsor company that makes cutting heads, too.
And that's FAE.
Which cutting head do y'all use? I'm curious.
Yes, the FAE. It's a farm FAE. And ag and equipment. Yeah, FAE.
The farm and ag equipment.
Yeah, and I mean, it leaves a bed of just like mulch, you know, behind, and they work really fast. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, you don't have to have high flow for them. But yeah, whether it's Cat, John Deere, Kubota, whoever. You want the highest flow hydraulics in that. And they are so versatile for so many things. But, you know, in some cases, you might want to cut something where, you know, it gets pretty hard on them if you're trying to cut too big a tree, too. So it just depends on to cut. If it's just brush, small brush, no doubt the cutting head's the best, fastest, easiest, you know.
Dozer is like when you get bigger.
That's my favorite Tonka toy.
When you drop a dozer in there, if you don't have a good operator, you pull so much of your topsoil, that make them has to really know what he's doing. He can't just drop the blade and say, I'm just going to go plow it, because you'll build a fence that they won't never get through.
No, but when you get through with it, because I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to move any topsoil when I'm doing it. But I'm going to flip those out and out of the way. And in a lot of cases, if it's brushy, that means you don't have tall timber there. It'll grow something too. So you make it just a little wider. If you're using a dozer, flip it out of the way when you smooth it up. Unless if you're just moving, you know, smaller trees, you don't have to get rid of the dirt. In fact, you can flip it up and roll it around and probably knock most of the dirt off of it before you push it out of the way. But when I'm done, you actually have a lane you can plant. So those spindle spokes that you can plant something down are really deadly.
So how wide you just got to go? 30 foot?
No,
60
foot? No, it's like just long. Well, if it's facing south, you don't have to have as much as if it's facing east and west, because it's going to get more sun. So it's just about getting sun, you know?
And nowadays, you don't really have to own any of that equipment. There's so many good operators around that you can split with your buddies and hire somebody out.
$175 an hour, you can get a guy to mulch.
Vandy's bringing in. So snacks.
Gerald, I'm sorry. You can probably see the backside of Vandy here.
Yeah.
But,
we're not on live TV, so I'm going to say bring here.
There's some kind of treat being passed.
I know what it
around.
Is because Dudley did it.
Dudley made it. Ooh, it smells.
We're going to freeze some and send it to you, Gerald.
Is that persimmon ice cream?
No, I think it's different. Pawpaw.
Pawpaw's?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
pawpaw ice cream.
Pawpaw ice cream.
Have you ever had any pawpaw ice cream, Gerald?
Gerald, you have never.
I hadn't, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you.
You have.
I know this is rude. I'm sorry.
That was ugly, wasn't it?
That really is good.
Have you tried it yet?
I'm just going to say that y'all eating that ice cream, that's the kind of stuff that makes them tree stand steps pop when you get on them in the morning. I tell you, you just keep eating that in that first two steps. It's going to sound like limbs breaking.
Dudley.
Dudley,
you missed your calling. Hey, Gerald, it may cause that other problem you had in the bass tournament that time.
Yes. You look like one of them. Hey, you look like a fox squirrel coming down a lob lolly, two of them fighting all the way down, just beating up a barking brash to the ground.
Wow.
Dudley, you might have missed your calling, buddy.
Well, we collected a bunch of pawpaw. You know, we got the tree nursery, and we saved the pulp. And, this is just a standard non-custard ice cream recipe.
You can really taste the pawpaw in it.
And we just put a couple of cups of pawpaw pulp in it that I had frozen. Mm. So it's pretty good.
It's delicious. Wow, that was a great idea. Like, wow. Hey, Gerald, I wanted to ask you a question. I saw a video. Actually, I sent it to you a few weeks ago where you were planting food plots in the rain. You were doing some mulching. You were working by yourself, and you were talking about how hard it is to get anybody to help you during when the hard work was going on, but everybody wants to go deer hunting.
Gerald, if I would have just known where you were coming from, I'd have got in the truck and rode over there to help you because I'd rather work on the place than hunt. No, seriously. But Bobby just sent me that, but no explanation.
Man. Well, I tell you, so the
that video got almost a million views on TikTok, and I actually said it kind of rude because I said everybody wants to be a deer hunter till it comes time to do deer hunting kind of shit, and nobody wants to show up. I'm like, that's what makes me mad. I'm like, nobody shows up, but come December, I've got my camo and I've got my rifle.
Hey, let me tell you though,
gates lock, bro.
You know what? I've gotten where I don't mind that as much because it makes it a lot easier to say no. When they ask, when nobody will help.
And I would rather work by myself sometime versus trying to tell somebody how to do it. So my wife says, she said, you're the guy that you kind of get frustrated because you don't have any help. She said, when you get help, you still do it by yourself anyway. She said, I don't know what you need. She said, I make her help me. She said the other day, she said, hey, you're going to have to get another hunting buddy because she said, I'm tired of lifting these corn bags. But it's part of it. But that... It's funny how those hunting videos and sometimes those that TikTok stuff just goes viral. Like I trying to figure the algorithm and when one of those are going to hit. You know, I had one last October that I did about a girl in a Dollar General, and I just was trying to tell the story about what I almost did wrong, and I'm just sitting in my truck and I had no idea that how viral it was going to go, and I posted it, and like 2 or 3 weeks later, Dollar General's calling, reached out to my wife through an email, and then Mountain Dew, and then Fox News played it, and then it was on in a ladies magazine, and then I think it ended up like 35 million views, and I'm like, but what I told the lady, what I thought was ironic, it was like the second or third largest women's magazine in the country, and she called to interview me about me talking about this young lady, and the premises was I was actually putting out cell cameras, guys, and I needed some cards and some batteries, and I was in Illinois. Of course, I'm like Toxie. I'm racing the clock. You know, I'm here for 11 hours. I got to do 16 hours worth of work, and I'm trying to get back out there and do it. And there was an old lady in front of me, I'm going to say late 80s, maybe 90s, and she was real slow and talking, and the girl behind the cash register handled her like an angel. She talked to her. She listened to every word. She smiled to her. And she looked over the lady's shoulder. She could see me waiting in line. And I'll be honest, at first, I'm getting impatient, you know, because at that time, I got my head in my butt, and it's just me and deer hunting and working. And then I kind of got caught up in the moment, and I thought, man, I hope I raised my daughter to be what this young lady is behind the counter, because she's listened to every word. She's never lost her patience. So I made the video reflecting on how bad I almost acted to how I wish my daughter was raised that way. So when this lady called me, she said this video, of course, Dollar General ended up giving this lady a college scholarship donation to give away. It really, it took off big. So the lady from the magazine asked me, I said, I want to ask you a question. I said, this is what, like one of the biggest women's publications out there. And I said, you do realize you're interviewing a guy that made a video wearing a mossy oak hat and a hunting shirt. I said, how weird is that? You got the biggest redneck wearing camo in a women's magazine. I said, see, I told her, I said, all hunters ain't bad, are they? She said, no. She said, if they all were like this, it'd be different. But I think it showed me, though, how powerful social media can be, and that you're still making a difference even when you don't think you're making a difference.
Yep.
Like, and even wearing that camo, you realize people put camo on sometime for two or three reasons. I think it's a fashion statement. It's what I do. You're telling your buddies I hunt. But you also don't realize when you put that camo on, no matter what pattern it is, whatever it is, you're representing hunters from around the world, outdoorsmen to some level. So there's some type of responsibility that we overlook that you don't realize you could change the perspective of how somebody sees a hunter. And it was such an out-and experience to me to think, okay, you just did a 2-minute video, it was crazy stupid, and now it's on Fox News. I think to me, it realized how powerful hunters can be sometimes when they don't even have a bow or a gun or nothing in their hand,
mm-hmm.
that you really show who you are. Like, this is, and I told the lady, I said, lady, I'm no different than most hunters you see in camo in Illinois or Southern Kentucky. They're just good old boys. I said, I just happened to be a one with a social media following that almost was a prick that realized it and thought my daddy will beat the brakes off me if I say something out of line. And he's 79 years old. And I made a video about it. So, like, it was that social media, and when this stuff's going to hit, who knows? But the TikTok world, that's where it's at, guys.
The tick and the talk. Mac, you play with that tick and talk.
It's all about leading by example.
You know, that may be the most, that may be the most meaningful thing that anybody has said on this podcast and all the times that we've been doing it. When you talk about putting on camo, no matter what pattern it is, you're representing hunters.
Y'all have heard me talk about it about a couple, 2 years ago maybe. If they had it last time and I spoke at that big crowd at the NWTF, I forgot we got that conservation award. But anyway, I was like, you know, when I've said this on the podcast one time, but he hit the same exact thing with this. It's like, you look at the news, you get around in the world. That's another thing that I love to get out and be on my place, you know, because it's just me and all the stuff God made. And I mean, it's just a piece like nothing else. I worry about the world, you know, Diane says I watch too much, worry about stuff I can't do anything about. It's just so sad how the world is. And I look out there at something like the NWTF or, you know, he's talking about hunters and all. This is no ego involved in this statement at all. It's the best people in the world,
mm-hmm.
largely. I mean, we got some scallywags too, but the best people, yeah, it's the best people in the world. And I was like, makes me so sad. What can we do? Well, it's like one thing we can do, all of us, go home. That's what I said. I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 people at the time. And be a good example.
Mm-hmm.
And he just nailed it when he said,
that's right.
We can be a good example. And you know what? Just him being a good example is more influential than any of us probably because of that following. But still, what's really powerful is all of us being a good example. And also helping everybody recognize the value in life of spending time outdoors because it's just the truth.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Big time.
Amen. Wow. Gerald, that was awesome. I'm glad you told
awesome.
That.
That was awesome.
That really. Look, along those lines.
It all spun up.
Well, look, along those lines, when we have a guest, we like to learn a little bit more about
it. Here we go.
And so we kind of give it over to Dudley, and he comes up with that. We call this rapid fire, and it's brought to you by our friends at Springfield Army.
Here.
Mm-hmm. And it's okay. So we ask you some questions, and you need to answer them as fast as you can.
So he'll give you a couple of options. He'll give you two options, and you pick one or say.
Hey, Gerald, when you get done with this, I'm going to have to get my sombrero out of here.
Toxie's got karate lessons, if I'm not mistaken.
Judo
lessons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kuwatsu. Yeah. But I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you. And if you'll send me the
Coxie, thanks for everything. Bud.
If you'll send I prefer on X to Google Earth. If you'll send a couple of pins where those tall feeders are, we'll be right on over.
Or those turkeys? Those turkeys.
Hey, I'll put you in one, son. I'm not afraid to let a guy kill him because I ain't got time to kill him. At least I know you worked on somebody's property. You worked on your own.
That's right. You got it. That is not an issue. They'll tell you that.
Yeah,
I'm addicted to that part of it.
Well, Tax, we appreciate you being here.
Sir.
We know you got to go somewhere.
I do. I'm going to say goodbye now.
All right, Dudley, why don't you explain what you're going to do?
All right, I'm just going to ask you some personal questions. It's either this or that, and you just need to answer it quickly. If you feel the urge to say both or neither or whatever, you can do that too. All right? Are you ready?
Okay.
Livers or gizzards?
Yes, sir.
Rapala or Rapala?
Rapala.
No. Soybeans or corn?
Rapala. Corn.
Mild or spicy?
Mild.
Original or crispy?
Crispy.
You like to eat crappie or bluegill?
Crappie.
Suzuki or Yamaha?
Ooh.
Neither. I prefer not to walk.
No comment.
I prefer not to walk.
No comment. No comment.
That was awesome.
War Eagle or Roll Tide?
Roll Tide.
Grow in the garden or buy at the store?
Grow in the garden.
Pistol. Vertical or horizontal?
Gangster.
Dove shoot or dove hunt?
Dove shoot, babe. Dove hunters are what keep people in business for shells. I'm a shooter.
Scrambled or fried?
Fried.
Lock on or climber?
Lock on for life.
Turnip greens or mustard greens?
Neither greens. I don't eat what deer do.
He had that experience one time.
All right, last question. Baby wipes, regular or with moisturizer?
It's dude wipes only, never cotton canal. Those cotton canal ones, whatever they cotton nail, they got something in them that will dry you out and chafe. You'll look like a silverback ape at the zoo down there, red on the backside. Dude wipes.
FTW.
Yeah.
That might be the best advice any of us got today. Like a
I've told Dude Wipes forever, I said, if y'all make them individual packs and put some mossy oak on them instead of that black, I said, we'll sell every one you got because the scent's held in. And I'm like, dude, everybody's ever used them. And I got tricks because you can put one in your front pocket, let it warm up, and when that mood hits you in the morning, it's like going in one of them little warm restaurants. So, it doesn't like a warm wiping. It just brings a hunt like alive. You just start hearing birds sing in church. You're listening.
The man who thinks of everything.
Yes, he does.
But he hadn't had a pawpaw ice cream yet.
No, we got to hook him up.
I'm getting that when I come back. I'm getting me some pawpaw.
Woo!
All right.
Yeah, that was
It'll set you free for sure.
Guys?
Yes, sir.
That was good. So, so what kind of boat motor are you liking these days?
I'm running a Phoenix. I run a Mercury 250 with a Phoenix 21-foot PHX. Pretty fast, pretty reliable, like on the big water. So, and it's all, I've only had two boat company sponsors in my career, and I've run Triton for almost 19 years, and then I've been with Phoenix. I'm not one to move around on that. Phoenix was a company I've always wanted to be with because they're family ran a lot like you guys are, like the owners, like I know everybody. So it's just a place I wanted to settle in for family. And I told them, I said, I'll be buried in one of these. I'm not never swapping again.
How about that? Well, so look, so you're so animated and you carry on so much stuff. When you're out there fishing these tournaments, are these water skiers or jet skiers, do they aggravate you? You ever chase one down and put them in their place?
Does Dolly Parton sleep on her back? Of course they aggravate you. They make my teeth itch, but like I'm actually boring when I'm fishing in tournaments. Most of the time when I compete, my marshal always say, he said, dude, you're like, flip the switch. He said, when they call your boat number out, it went straight like, full on beast, like he said, you don't talk, you don't smile, you don't nothing. I said, no, I'm trying to make money to buy another mulcher and a cutter. I say, it's business.
That's right.
It's all fun and games till we start fishing. But yes, sea doers and all that do aggravate you, but isn't it really nothing you can do? You just look at them and think, you know, I understand your mother dropped you when you was little in a grocery store or something. I understand. You get your head. There's no reason you should act that way, but nobody's ever told a jet skier, it ain't a spectator sport. You can only go straight and sideways. That's it. I mean, I'm not impressed. When you can start running it on dry ground and jumping them hills, I'll watch you. But right here on the water, it's pretty boring. You're just going around and around.
Yeah, I've never understood that.
So, Gerald, before we let you go, we got one more thing. We'd always like to ask a trivia question. If you get this right, one of our listeners wins a fabulous prize. So I'm going to turn it over to Richie now.
Okay.
Richie or Max, actually here today.
Max is here today. Yeah, you can tell we're kind of easing down on the seed shipment.
He was texting. I should have known.
I know.
All right, so hang on now. Let's get to tell us who we playing for, Max.
All right, so we're playing for Dalton Thunderhead, and Bobby said Mr. Toxie's closet was locked, so now we're playing for a Cooper hunting blind.
Okay.
One of the nice ones, yeah.
One of those umbrella blinds?
Yeah, that's right.
Been bottom land, no doubt.
All right, Thunderhead. You think that's for real?
Thunderhead, when I think of Thunderhead, I think of the old NAP broadhead Thunderheads, you know. So, I don't know. Maybe he's a bow hunter.
Yeah. Think of a storm.
I called that the Greg Maddox Thunderhead. You couldn't fly it straight. It had a great breaking ball. I shot them Thunderheads when I was trying to shoot them deer that got behind them trees because it'd go out and circle the tree. Great.
All right, here we go.
You ready, Gerald? All right.
I'm ready.
What does the Alabama state record largemouth bass weigh?
Is that a multiple choice, or has he got to know it exactly?
No, he's got to know it.
Now, there's some private pond fish that's caught that's been like 17 and 18, but it's a little over 16 pounds is what I'm 99% sure the Alabama state record out of a public reservoir is.
That's he right.
Nailed it. Yep. Of course. Ding, ding, good ding, job.
Ding. I think 16 pounds, 8 ounces.
Boom.
Hey.
That's a big old fish.
Yeah. So, Gerald, you know that the record.
That's a dadgum dandy.
The record here in Mississippi, there was an 18 pounder.
In Davis Lake, wasn't it?
Natchez Park Lake. Where is that?
Natchez
Trace Park Lake.
It's in Pontotoc.
I need you to drop me a pin.
Ain't
there.
No problem. I grew up right by there.
So, Gerald, I wanted to ask you one question, please. I love Rapala Baits, and I never knew how Rapala. To pronounce the name.
Rapala?
I called them Rapala, but he called them Rapala.
Yeah. Oh, my bad.
So, but I love them. Always have. They're my favorite crankbaits. If you open my box, I got a bunch of them. Last weekend, I lost a fish that had to weigh 12 or 14
of
pounds.
Of course he did if you lost him.
And I had changed up and was using a bait that had just been riding in my tackle box for years. I'd never used it. But so it was, do I need to be changing out the treble hooks in my crankbaits is my question.
Ah, good question.
Because how did he get off a crankbait?
Was it rusty?
It's one of them things on a crankbait, like on all that, because I'm a Rapala guy, Rapala, Rapala. I say it's according to where you're at on the Mason-Dixon line or how you pronounce that. You know, if you go up north, it's Rapala. It's Rapala. Down here, it's Rapala or Rapala. You know, they get that. If you're from Mississippi, they get that Rapala. Like you got a chew on there. But the new ones, the DT6, the DT8s, the 10s, you know, VMC, Rapala actually owns VMC. So the baits over the last 6 or 8 years, the hooks have become extremely, extremely good. So on all the newer version baits of them, no, I don't change any hooks out. But if you happen to have some old Rapala baits from back 10 or 15 years ago, I would say probably go ahead and change them.
Yeah, that may have been my problem.
You'd have had a 14
and it's a mystery
bass.
How they come off. Yeah, it's a mystery. You got 6 hooks on there, and that sucker can jump off before you could move. That makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like I had the hooks buried on this one, and then all of a sudden they came off. So
Must have been in your hook set.
Yeah.
Could have been. It was a big fish, so.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
Nope.
Look, I'm looking at Mac. Mac, you're looking at me like a cow looking at a new gate. Have you got a question for Gerald?
No, I enjoyed it.
It has been fun.
It was
super fun, super enjoyable. And
fun.
Learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah. We learned a lot.
I enjoyed it, guys.
I would like to invite you to let's do it again, but get you to come over here and actually sit down with
maybe
us.
Come hunting with us. Yeah, and come sit in the studio with us. That'd be great.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I'd love to be able to come sit in the studio or hunt a little bit or just cook around camp. You know, I'm still weird. If I didn't do a lot of work, I don't want to hunt. But I mean, I can do the toxic routine. So I want to kill some does.
We'll get you to clean the does.
Yeah, well, we always got does to shoot.
Hey, I can do that too. I'm glad I got to be on. I'm like, I told Lynn, I said, I didn't get to do one, and I said it'll be, you know, it's been a big passion of mine, like working this land and our farm and us together. I mean, we've worked till we about broke ourselves down, but it's like I said, been a different phase of my life where I enjoy that blood, sweat, and tears and growing them. So to talk to you guys and see what y'all are doing and get tips from like Toxie and how he works on his farm. It's kind of cool for me because I can put it to work on my farm.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, hey, Gerald, Mac has raised his hand. Evidently, he's got a question now.
Surface.
Go ahead.
One more rapid fire. Bottom land or green leaf in the turkey woods?
Okay. Bottom land.
Boom.
Yeah. All right.
Bottom land's going. You can't go wrong with bottom land.
You can.
You can wear bottom land to a funeral. Or marriage, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
You got bottom land on, you gonna fit in.
You good.
I'd go to a Tupac concert wearing bottom land. Wouldn't you worry about it?
A what?
Tupac.
What is that?
You know Tupac.
Tupac.
and he's dead.
It's right there with your Barry Manilow album.
Oh yeah. Okay. Now, okay. Look, yeah. Gerald, we have really enjoyed this. Thank you so much. And look,
appreciate you, guys, I appreciate it. Yes, I got about 30 more bags of corn to put out today, 2 feeders to put up, and 2 cameras. So
work to
my
be
wife's
done.
Looking at me like it's going to be dark again. It is work to be done, but we're fixing to hit it. Guys, good anytime, I'd love to come back and do it in the studio, but I hope you guys have a great weekend, and I'm going to get some work done.
Well, hang on. Thanks, before, Joe. Before you leave now, your wife is, you call her, her name is Lulu?
We call her Lulu.
Well, tell her we appreciate her setting this up because she went to a lot of trouble to set this up. And, Jared, I just want to say
– she's.
For everybody at Mossy Oak, we appreciate the way you represent our brand out
no
there,
doubt about
and
it.
We really do. And there's a lot of people. Tox had to leave, but I know he would say that.
Well, I appreciate it, guys, and I look forward to many years down the road. We're just gonna keep being, rednecks and try to be better people every day. But Lord, that's a struggle some days. I'm gonna be honest with you. There's days during the week where like I'm just not gonna be a good person today. I can tell you, I just ain't gonna be able to rally it up.
Yeah,
we can keep trying.
I'm gonna get on the tractor.
All right, we'll let you go, Gerald. Thank you.
Thanks, Gerald. Y'all have fun out there.
All right, y'all have.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, he's gone. Yeah. Wow, that was
good. Yeah, it really is. And you know, hearing how passionate he is, obviously he's a high energy guy. You know, and works hard at everything. So seeing how that translates into his hunting stuff, because you know he's successful fishing for the same reason. So
yeah,
it's really cool. Sorry, I was late.
Well,
sounds
I mean,
like I'm in trouble over busted tires.
He's just high profile. He's got a bunch of fans, and you know, getting out there in the woods, just him and his wife. Talk about therapeutic.
Oh yeah, you know? No doubt about it.
It is a cool story. She was super helpful in putting this whole thing together. Dudley, I'm gonna ask you. We maybe wait till next week, and we'll do 2. Ask Dudley.
Okay. We've gotten a little long-winded.
Yeah,
so
I
agree.
So, look, guys, this has been a lot of fun. The TV show's Tuesday night. We got a new one. The Dove Show just aired last week. Richie, you're a great job. Glad that things have slowed down. We got Mac back in here.
The house.
He's over there texting as we speak. So, Dudley, why don't you, if you don't have anything else, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Richie.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.